1, 2, 3.
I'm Redbeard, and today in the studio, one of the most acclaimed live albums ever gets even better.
The Fillmore East was everybody's favorite gig to play. It was the Carnegie Hall of rock and roll.
It was a real status thing to play there, and you got like a real select crowd when you played there. I mean, the people came there. It was kind of like an underground type thing.
Hi, I'm Greg Allman.
And I'm Dickie Betts.
And you're in the studio.
Looking back, the year 1971 was bittersweet for the original Allman Brothers Band, a time of both commercial breakthrough as well as heartbreak. Their second album, Idlewild South, had breached the U.S. Top 40 sales for the first time, and the band leader, Duane Allman, had by then recorded the now classic Layla album with Eric Clapton as Derek and the Dominoes. As a result, Duane Allman quickly was gaining a reputation as the premier slide guitarist, and the band, fronted by him and younger brother Greg, was invited to play 4 shows over 2 nights in March at Bill Graham's New York City Music Hall, the Fillmore East, as well as the closing night of the Fillmore in late June of 1971. Even if you've collected the original Allman Brothers Band Live at Fillmore East album, the Eat a Peach Live Sides, the Duane Allman Anthologies 1 and 2, and the Dreams Box Set, there are still 15 additional live performances that year at the venue that have never been released until now, as the 1971 Fillmore East recordings. The Allman Brothers Band had to be seen and heard live to be fully appreciated. Lead singer, songwriter, organist Greg Allman recalls spreading the word based out of their home in Daytona Beach, Florida, and later Macon, Georgia.
Yeah, we had some rough road trips back then. We had bought us a Winnebago camper that we absolutely just drove into the ground. We had some pretty rough gigs. Before that, we were traveling. We had an Econoline van, and we were in there like hot dogs, you know, like head to toe. And I remember we had one long jaunt that went from, we got through playing one night in Philadelphia and drove to San Francisco to the Fillmore. And we had to go via Dallas because the snow was so bad. And I mean, by the time we got there, we were all just, oh God. I felt like it had been some kind of time warp machine or something.
Okay, the Allman
Blue. Well, I'm talking the corner, baby. And grandma seemed to have them too.
your sister Lucille such a rendezvous. And I saw her take.
Blind Willie McTell, the Allman Brothers Band's arrangement of Statesboro Blues became the definitive version when it led off the original Live at Fillmore East album in July 1971. The album ranking on Rolling Stone magazine's top 500 albums of all time at an impressive number 49. Still in his teens, Greg Allman's budding songwriting talent had landed him a publishing job in Los Angeles in 1968, over 3,000 miles away from home for the first time. Meanwhile, older brother Dwayne had left his Muscle Shoals session guitarist gig, playing on Aretha Franklin and Boz Scaggs songs, and put together a band back in Daytona Beach. One phone call from big brother Dwayne Allman and hitchhiking the width of America is all it took for Greg Allman to return.
I've been away from my brother for 11 months, and during that time, he learned how to play slide guitar. I mean, he just was barely touching on it before, and he'd gotten real good. So I go in there, and there's two sets of traps set up, you know, two full sets of drums, and two lead guitar players and a bass player, and I'm thinking, God, this is either going to be real good or real bad. But knowing my brother, you know, I figured it was going to be good, but I didn't figure it was going to be that good. So they haul on their instruments, and they had that song Trouble No More, the old Muddy Waters song. And so there was no singer, so they just did the track to it, right? And they hand me the lyrics on the piece of paper, right? And I mean, it was so incredible. I got through with it, and I was just standing there dumbfounded. And I got my brother over to the side and I said, look, man, I'm not real sure if I can cut this or not, you know. You might want to look for somebody better than me. And he came all apart, you know. He said, you know, you little... After I told these guys all about you, you know, this is an earshot to them, right? And he, you know, said just the things that big brothers can, man, just enough to make me so mad. I snatched some words out of his hand. I said, count the damn thing off. Yeah.
unbeatable combination, Muddy Waters' song Trouble No More, done by the original Allman Brothers Band at the Fillmore East in March 1971. With no internet, no MTV, or VH1, no YouTube in those days, there were few ways to promote your band. Try to get a record deal, try then to get on the radio, and hit the road humping your own gear, according to Greg Allman.
The hot spots were Atlanta, of course. Cincinnati was a big place for us, a place called Ludlow's Garage. We never picked up quite as much on the Fillmore West. We never got quite as big out there as we did in the East. As a matter of fact, we never, along the eastern seaboard, in just the eastern part of the country, we were bigger there than we were in the western part because we frequented the East Coast a lot more, and New York City had become a real hot one, I guess because of the Fillmore East, because we went and played there time and time again. We played the Fillmore East many, many times. We were like the opening act, and then the third opening act, and then second opening act. Finally, we headlined it, I think.
Original guitarist, now former Allman Brothers Band member Dickie Betts and Greg Allman recalled the lure of Bill Graham's Fillmore East in New York City.
The Fillmore East was everybody's favorite gig to play. It was the Carnegie Hall of rock and roll. Bill Graham made a very great presentation of rock and roll with the light shows and the curtains and the presentation of the bands and the set changes. But the Fillmore East wasn't big enough to pay any of the bands what they made other places. So, I think the general feeling among everybody that played there was, you know, even though we could be playing somewhere else for three times the money, we'd rather come to the Fillmore East and play because it's such a great place to play.
It was a real status thing to play there, and you got like a real select crowd when you play there. I mean, the people came there. It was kind of like an underground type thing. But the money was pretty tired, right?
Yeah, it was a small place. I think it seated like 6,000, I don't know, 5,000. But it was the best rock and roll showcase that you could play.
Thank you. walk in, take my place. Ain't nowhere to wear, I'm going out that front door.
The song One Way Out was first released on the 1972 half-studio, half-live album Eat a Peach, recorded on the final night of the storied New York City nightclub. I'm Redbeard, with Greg Allman and founding guitarist Dickie Betts in the studio on the anniversary of the Allman Brothers Band, live at Fillmore East.
Hi, I'm Greg Allman.
And I'm Dickie Betts.
And you're in the studio
with the Allman Brothers Band.
Thank you, guys. I'm Redbeard, exploring the complete 1971 Fillmore East recordings of the Allman Brothers Band, now available as a box set. Recalling the four March 1971 sets over two nights are Greg Allman and former guitarist Dickie Betts in the studio.
Everything was bizarre about all three nights.
I recall the second night being the best night of the two. I think the first night was mostly, there were a lot of the industry people there and a lot of record business people there, and, they tend to be a little more reserved than the crowd we were used to. But the second night was more the Allman Brothers fans, and it seemed to be the real heavy of the two nights.
We had a bomb scare one night, right?
Was that it?
I think so. Everybody left and went out in the street, and the bomb squad came.
Was that during the recording of that? I remember that happening.
I think it was one of those three nights. That's one way of getting backstage, I guess.
Call it stormy Monday, but Tuesday's just as bad. They call it stormy Monday, but Tuesday's just as bad. Lord, and Wednesday's worse. Thursday's also sad. Saturday I go out to play. The eagle flies on Friday. Saturday I go out to play. Sunday I go to church, yeah. Go to line of them to pray. Lord have mercy. Lord have mercy on me. Thank you.
the summer before my brother passed away, all hell broke loose. I mean, here it came. It was so fast, man. I mean, money was coming from everywhere. Being the main writer, I was making like, you know, two and a half times more than everybody else. And I remember I had the guys over to my house one afternoon. We were sitting there, you know, having a drink or what have you. One of my roadies wanted to buy this TV set that I had. So he picks it up, and I had stashed his check underneath it, right? And the Red Dog, I heard him say, man, look here under this TV. There's a check for $34,000 in here, man. And I'm going, oh, no, he found it.
Version of Texan T-Bone Walker's Stormy Monday is by far my favorite of the often-covered blues standard found on the 1971 Fillmore East recordings by the Allman Brothers Band. Midnight Rider, written and sung by Greg Allman, was composed in a singularly unique fashion.
I was staying in this house. My brother was staying with this girl that he knew, right? He was like crashing there. And she had a baby. I didn't know where I was. I woke up in the middle of the night with this tune in my head and I couldn't find the light switch, so I found this this ironing board and this box of kitchen matches, right? So I would strike one match and then strike another and blow it out, and I wrote it on this ironing board cover with the charcoal. I'd light the match and blow it out. So, yeah, I'd get about 1.5 words out of each match, you know. So I caught mucho hell for it the next day when she woke up and found her ironing board cover all ruined. But there it was, you know, and at least I had it all down. So the next morning I copied it down on paper. By nightfall, we had learned it and had it all the way down. I wonder where that ironing board cover is today. I'd like to have it back, really.
The Midnight Rider. lets me know I'm not gonna let him catch the midnight rider. No, I'm not gonna let him catch me, no. I'm not gonna let him catch the midnight rider. The midnight rider. No, I'm not gonna let him catch me, no. I'm not gonna let him catch the midnight rider.
Still to come, Greg Allman and Dickie Betts discuss the risks as well as the rewards to live improvisation, which resulted in the Allman Brothers Band starting the jam band tradition in rock. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with namesake Greg Allman of the Allman Brothers Band, plus Dickie Betts for the anniversary of Live at Fillmore East by the Allman Brothers Band.
Hi, I'm Greg Allman.
And I'm Dickie Betts.
And you're in the studio
with the Allman Brothers Band.
And I'm Redbeard, exploring the sumptuous complete box set containing the 1971 Fillmore East recordings, every note from every show by the original Allman Brothers Band at the Fillmore East in March and June that year. By that time, the group was developing a reputation for epic-length concerts, where the double drummers Butch Trucks and Johnny J-Mo Johansson, bass player Barry Oakley, guitarist Dickie Betts and Dwayne Allman, and singer-organist Greg Allman could stretch out in expanded arrangements that spotlighted the musical virtuosity of each musician. Greg Allman goes first, followed by Betts.
There were no boundaries, you know, back then. In the early 70s. I mean, there was no, like, we better shut this tune off at a certain time. And it was never even, like, thought of, you know.
In the 60s and 70s, people really appreciated watching you do a lot of improv and watching you put yourself in out on a limb right to the edge and stumble and fall and get back up and put the music back together, and they'd see this whole thing taking place right there on stage. And you know, that was the whole attraction to the crowd about the jamming. And, of course, we enjoyed it as much as anybody did. That's the kind of thing that we were strong at, is the improvisation. So, you know, a lot of our stuff is written as a vehicle for that improvisation, which makes the Allman Brothers Band interesting, along with, you know, a lot of other bands. We're not the only people that jam. But it is... It is a risky business, you know. You can paint yourself into a corner real easy with that kind of thing. So maybe that's why some, you know, groups shy away from it when they're in front of a live audience.
The original release of the March 1971 Fillmore East shows as a double album in July was a legitimate breakthrough for the Allman Brothers Band, who toured through September before returning to Macon, Georgia, to record what would be released the following year as Eat a Peach. In October, while recording, band leader Dwayne Allman lost control of his motorcycle, crashed, and died. Dickie Betts, followed by Greg Allman in the studio.
You know, the Eat a Peach record was pretty strange to us because that's when Dwayne was killed, right in the middle of that recording. So, you know, we kind of went through a whole lot of stuff, you know, with that.
That changed the arrangement of the songs. It was like two different projects.
Yeah.
We used some of it on each one. It was a strange time back then.
Sometimes I feel like I'm done. So I'm with my boys. Sometimes.
Betts points out why jam bands need to have very good collective memories.
I brought that tune into the band, and everybody in the band kept saying, well, we've heard this melody before. It's some Russian folk song, or it's a song that, you know, you've written somebody else's tune here because we've heard it. And nobody could quite pin down what the tune was, so I just thought, well, because the melody line is familiar sounding, that just means that it's working good. And after we'd cut the thing, the question kept coming up. We were listening to Fillmore East one night in Whipping Post, and in the middle of one of the big improv jams, I played that melody just as a guitar solo, and everybody had forgotten about it, including me, and then it came back in La Brea's, and it was kind of a funny situation because that's where everybody had heard it.
Thank you.
was basically why we did just about everything. That's what we had to like hold on to. You know? The music was always kick-ass from the very start. So that was a real constant thing in our lives, you know. Without the music, if the music hadn't have been the way it was, then the brotherhood wouldn't have been the way it was. And the whole thing would have just collapsed a long time ago.
There's just one of 15 performances previously unreleased until now on the 6 CD, 3 Blu-ray surround sound, multi-vinyl box sets of the 1971 Fillmore East recordings by the Allman Brothers Band. The Allman Brothers Band has called it a career. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking the namesake, Greg Allman of the Allman Brothers Band, plus Dickie Betts. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2016, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.